It is our great pleasure to continue this study of the book of Job. We're still in the first chapter, and last time we'd gotten into the sixth verse. So I'd like to begin at that point, the sixth verse of the first chapter. It says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them." One would think, since Job was so rich and great, so wise and good, so well set with family and devoted to God, so well grounded in the faith and power, that he was so secure that with his mountain of prosperity that nothing could move him, that God would be very pleased with what's going on and not let anything happen to change the situation with Job. But here we have storm clouds gathering, which will make a horrible hurricane of devastating destruction for Job. And we must ever keep this in mind while we're dwelling in this place on earth, that we too may be in the same position Job was in, although we're so righteous, doing the very best that we know, and so prosperous, and having so much power, that we can be set for the same devastation that Job had. Here we have, in this sixth verse, Satan among the sons of God. Satan, the adversary of all that is good, is actually an assembly of the sons of God that came to present themselves before the Lord. There is a possibility that this is an assembly of the saints on earth. In Genesis 6 and 2, those who followed God were called the sons of God, and this could have been an assembly of these patriarchs in the presence of God, and Satan came in among them, just as he did in the Garden of Eden. But I prefer to think that this was a meeting of the angels in heaven. They are also the sons of God, according to Job 38:7. They came to give an account to God of their work on earth and to receive more instructions. Satan was originally one of them. "But how hast thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations?" Isaiah 14:12. Although Satan no longer stands with the faithful angels, he is somehow allowed into this meeting, whether called to appear as a criminal or present as an intruder, or we do not know exactly what his position was in this meeting, but this is an assembly which gets our attention. What? Satan among the sons of God? Yes, for he transforms himself into an angel of light according to the Apostle Paul. In 2 Corinthians 11:13-14, he says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." That's what the Apostle Paul said. And so today, here on earth, a minister of Satan may be found in the assemblies of the sons of God. An assembly of the church may have a minister of Satan in the midst of it, unknown by men, but known by God. And Satan himself may be among us, unseen by men, but seen by God. Nevertheless, he's there to do his devastating work. The seventh verse of Job 1 says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and walking up and down in it." Whence comest thou? God's question to Satan. How did you get here? Or what were you doing before you came here? This may have been a question asked of all who were present. We must all give account to God. But Satan's answer was, "From going to and fro in the earth, and walking up and down in it." He could not pretend he was doing any good like the angels were. He did not admit to doing any harm. That had been turning people from God and deceiving and destroying souls. He admits to staying within the bounds allotted to him, the earth. Not yet confined to his place of torment, the place ultimately reserved for the devil and his angels, according to Jesus. Yet we see from what he reveals that he had been busy, going to and fro, walking up and down the earth, not sleeping, not resting, not inactive. 1 Peter 5:8, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour." Peter knew what the devil was doing. The devil is continually searching about the earth, looking for opportunity to turn you away from God. Do not give him the chance. We must be sober and vigilant, as Peter says. Let's be on watch for the devil. He's walking up and down the earth looking for those that he may deceive into turning from God. Verse 8 says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" We have the question God asked Satan about Job. "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" Notice how honorably God speaks of Job. "He is my servant." Good people are the servants of God. God says there's none like him in the earth. Of all the kings and princes, warriors and leaders, learned and philosophers, strong and beautiful, there is none like him in the earth. This is how God feels toward his servant. Now remember, this is during the time of the patriarchal age. God dealt with the heads of families. Any head of a family God would deal with who was trying to serve God. But Job, there was none like him in all the earth. This is the feeling Christ had centuries later when he commended the centurion and the woman of Canaan, who were both like Job, in that they were strangers to the commonwealth of Israel. Jesus said, "I have not found such great faith, no, not in Israel." Matthew 8 and 10. And Matthew 15, 22-28. God tells Satan about the good character of Job. He itemizes Job's qualities to the devil. Here is the one person Satan had not been able to deceive. Satan had failed in Job's case, and God is pleased to name his qualities. A perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth or shunneth evil. This would take away from Satan's boast of walking to and fro as though he had conquered all. Satan had not conquered Job, and God reminds him of this. So God asked Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" To consider is to study, to think about, to really know if Job had a weakness or a flaw. Was Job's righteousness real, or was this just a sham? Verse 9 says, "Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught?" This is Satan's answer to God's question, "Have you considered my servant Job?" The only answer Satan has is to insinuate that Job wasn't what he looked to be. He implies that Job had an ulterior motive instead of faith in and love for God. Oh, how easy it is to run someone down sometimes just by insinuations, implying this or that with no proof. Remember, the next time you're tempted to do this, that this is a tactic of the devil. This is attacking character with no true basis, simply evil surmising or guessing. Let us not lower ourselves to Satan's level by acting in this manner. Verse 10 says, "Hast thou not made an hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land." Satan uses Job's prosperity as some kind of evidence that Job was only serving God because God had blessed him. It is true that God did greatly bless Job. Godliness with contentment is great gain, 1 Timothy 6:6 says. All the benefits Satan accused Job of getting were truly given to Job, and God's servants can expect God to bless them. But the implication by the devil was that if God had not so blessed Job, that Job would not have obeyed and served God. This was an unproven allegation, but it was the best argument Satan could make against Job. Like telling a parent, "Your child only loves you because you do good things for him." How unfair to both the child and the parent. Yet Satan does not care how unfair his charges are. He wanted a chance at Job. Satan wanted to get at Job. Satan charged Job with hypocrisy because he was greatly blessed. Later, his friend would charge Job with hypocrisy because he was greatly afflicted. So yes, Satan had considered God's servant Job. He knew all about Job. He knew he had not been able to get an advantage of Job. And yes, Satan had considered each of us. He knows our weaknesses. He knows our faithfulness or our unfaithfulness to God. He knows how God has blessed each of us. And who knows but what Satan may have a conversation with God about us just as he did Job. How would God describe us in such a conversation? Would he call us his servant as he did Job? Would Satan need to make a false insinuation to degrade us? Or could he simply tell the truth and make God ashamed of us? Satan is continually trying to get an advantage over us. He knows us quite well. Verse 11 says, "But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." Satan here attempts to prove that Job is hypocritical and only serves God because God has blessed him. Satan boasts that he can prove Job to be an unfaithful servant to God if Job be stripped of all that he has. Make him poor, and he'll curse thee to thy face, the devil says. Notice how cold and unfeeling the devil is about Job. Touch everything he has. The devil has no mercy on those he seeks to devour. He doesn't care how bad they have to hurt, how much he takes away from them. He truly is a roaring lion. Satan may have believed that this would prove Job to be unfaithful. If so, this would only give him more zeal as he acted against Job. The 12th verse says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord." God gives Satan permission to afflict Job, to try his sincerity. Why God did this, we are not told. We do not know. But we must believe that in all the wise counsels of God and his heavenly kingdom, that he had a very good reason to prove Job, to defeat the devil, to set an example for the rest of the world, actually millions and millions of people, including us today, who are reading this story, or for some other reason having to do with the heavenly realm of which we are not aware. And so today, we do not know all the reasons why God deals with us as he does, but we do know that whatever God does, he has a good reason for doing it, and it should not deter us from doing our duty. So whatever God's purpose was, and we believe it was a good purpose, Satan got permission to afflict Job in a very serious manner. Satan wanted God to do it. Put forth thine hand now, he demanded. But God arranged it so that if the deed were done, Satan would have to do it. All that he has is in thy hand, God said. Make the trial as hard as thou can. Do thy worst to him. And as we wonder again why God gave Satan such permission, we must realize that he did it for his own glory, for the honor of Job, the putting down of the devil, to encourage his afflicted people in every age, and to make a case which could be an example to us all of every age of a faithful servant of God. God suffered Job to be tried, just as he allowed other faithful to be tried, and the result was praise, honor, and glory. 1 Peter 1 and 7, "That the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ." It comforts us to know that God has control and power over Satan. He could not afflict Job without permission from God, and then God limited what he could do. "Only upon himself put not forth thy hand," he said. God told Satan not to touch Job. Then Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. He was glad that he had gotten permission to do bad things to a good man. Resolved to lose no time, he would concentrate on his major effort to fall upon poor Job, who is carefully going about the way of duty and knows nothing about the matter between God and Satan. He knows not that he is now the object of Satan's wrath and power. How much happens in the spirit world which concerns us, yet we know nothing of it. The 13th verse says, "And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house." Satan brought the calamities on Job beginning on the very day his children had come together to begin their feasting at their elder brother's house. The whole family was calm and in no fear of trouble. They were doing routine activities as usual with no thought of tragedy or danger. And this made the whole ordeal even more of a shock. These troubles came upon Job at once. While one messenger brought bad news, behold, another and a third and a fourth followed immediately. Satan no doubt ordered it this way so Job would not have time to collect his thoughts or to make some kind of defense before God, as though he were guilty of some wrong without having been accused, thus to turn Job against God. This gave Job no time to adjust to the ruin of one thing before another thing was also ruined, thus encouraging Job to speak out hastily and curse God. Verses 14 and 15 say, "And there came a messenger unto Job and said, The oxen were plowing, and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." They took from Job all he had. He had 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she asses, and an adequate number of servants. The servants were doing their job, oxen plowing, the she asses feeding, under the servant's eye, each in his place. All our carefulness, diligence, going about our duty cannot guarantee safety. Be ever so cautious, it doesn't guarantee safety. Yet, it is some comfort to know that our trouble is not from neglect. It was from the wickedness of his neighbors, the Sabians, probably a group of robbers that lived by plundering and stealing. The Sabians were from South Arabia, descendants of Shem, from the land of Sheba, according to Genesis 10:28. They carried off the oxen and slew the servants and left only one servant to tell Job the story as an eyewitness. We have no reason to think the attack was provoked. Satan is the spirit that walks in the children of disobedience. Although the Sabians did the deed, they will have to give account to God for their actions. The devil was behind it all. It was his plan. The 16th verse says, while he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep and the servants, and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Lightning caused the loss of 7,000 sheep, and the shepherds that kept them. Before Job could take any action against the Sabians, another lone survivor of a tragedy brings news of the effect of the fire of God. The animals and servants were consumed. Again, Satan wants Job to curse God. All the sheep from which Job would select a sacrifice to God were taken, as though God did not want his sacrifice. As Satan had misrepresented Job to God, now he misrepresents God to Job. This would tempt Job to say, it is not good to try to serve God. Verse 17 says, and while he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, the Chaldeans made out 3 bands, and fell upon the camels, and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. He had 300 camels with servants tending them. He lost them all at the same time by the Chaldeans, who came in 3 bands, and drove them away, and slew all the servants except one. Chaldeans were from the east, the land of Abraham. Babylon was his capital. Had God's fire consumed the evil Sheba'ites and Chaldeans, then it would have been easy to understand and to accept why this happened. But when the way of the wicked prospers, and they carry off their stolen goods, while the just and good men are suddenly wiped out, God's righteousness is hard for us to see. This is the very situation the devil prepared for Job. Since Job could not see the whole picture, all he could see from his limited view was bad. How often are we given only Job's view when events happen in our lives? We can only see what Job saw. We can only see the bad. We, as Job, have no way of knowing that what the total picture is. We cannot see what God sees. Let us remember this as we encounter the buffets of life. We do not see the total picture many times. Verses 18 and 19 say, while he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, and smote the 4 corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. His dearest and most valuable possessions were his 10 children, and to conclude the tragedy, news is immediately brought to him. He was told that they were killed and buried in the ruins of the house in which they were feasting, and all the servants who waited on them except the one who brought the bad news of their death. This was the greatest of Job's losses, the one most harmful to him. The devil reserved it for the last. So if the other great provocations failed, then this would surely cause him to curse God. Our children are part of ourselves. It's very hard to see them injured or to have to part with them. This loss will very seriously touch any person in a deep way. But to part with them all at once, and for them to be all cut off in a moment, they who had been so many years of his cares and hopes, this went to the quick indeed. They had all died at once. Not one of them was left alive. David, though a wise and good man, was very distressed by the death of one son. How hard on Job, who in a moment was made completely childish. He lost 10 children. They died suddenly. Had they been taken away by some lingering disease, he would have had time to expect their death and prepare for the loss. They died when they were feasting and making merry, the very time Job was most fearful that they may have sinned. Had they died while praying, he might have borne it better. To have them to die when he wasn't sure of their spiritual state could only add to his grief, considering what a concern he had always had for his children's souls. Now they were out of reach of the sacrifices he used to offer according to the number of them all. They died by a wind caused by the devil, who is the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2 and 2. But it looked like the hand of God caused by his wrath. So Bildad construed it in chapter 8, 4, "Thy children have sinned against him, and he's cast them away in their transgression." They were taken away when Job had the most need of them to comfort him after the other losses. This reminds us that it is in God only that we can have help at all times. The devil now has done all he was allowed to do against Job to provoke him to curse God. Job, who was the richest man in all the East when the sun arose, was the poorest man in all the world when nightfall came. If his riches had been his only cause for faith in God, as Satan declared, now that he lost his riches, he would have also lost all of his faith. But the story we have in these next few verses proves the devil to be a liar and Job to be an honest man. Remember, these things are written for our benefit. They are written so that we can realize that we too may stand in the very same place that Job was in at this time, and it'll be a test of our faith at that time also. We'll continue this story in our next lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.